Welcome to Expanding Your Faith, a podcast hosted by Bishop Greer Godsey of the Old Catholic Churches International. Expanding Your Faith brings together a panel of well-educated clergy and laity to discuss modern events with a biblical perspective. Our podcast is about to start. Please stay tuned. Good evening and welcome to Expanding Your Faith. I'm Bishop Greer, and joining me tonight is Reverend Mark.
Greetings, everybody.
And Bishop Ben.
Greetings, everybody, and thank you for having me.
I want to, before we jump into our topic tonight is what it takes to be clergy, essentially. Talking about, you know, the training and work we go through, as well as what we go through on a daily basis, what we do as clergy, kind of giving people a look behind the curtain. But before I do, today in Pennsylvania, former President Trump, who's running for a re-election, running to be elected again for another term, was shot at. We now know that the shooter is deceased, and as well as another member in the crowd, and possibly a third one in serious condition at the hospital. There's a lot of conflicting reports at this early moment, but I wanted to take this opportunity to make very clear, it doesn't matter what side of the political spectrum you're on. It doesn't matter what your beliefs about politics are or the people running. Violence of this kind is never acceptable. And we've had only a handful of times where our presidents have either been assassinated or nearly assassinated in the history of this country. In fact, you can count them all on two hands in over 200 years. And sadly, this is another one of those to put in the books. And it should not happen. No matter what we think of the person, no matter how bad a leader we think they'll be, the American way is to go to the voting booth and change it through voting, not through violence. And just like we condemned January 6th, we condemn today's act of violence in Pennsylvania in the strongest possible terms. So do keep everyone in your prayers, especially those hurt and wounded this day, and those who have lost their lives this day, and their family and friends, as we hopefully move forward from this and learn from this. All right, so we're going to talk about what it means to be clergy, what it takes to be clergy, what we do on a daily basis, because, you know, I hear a lot, and I'm sure Reverend Mark and Bishop Ben do too. Well, it's not like you have a lot to do. You only work one day a week.
Yep. that thing gets kind of old.
I wish that were true.
Me too.
I wish I only worked one day a week, but no. We work all week long and then some. And so we're going to talk about that today. And let's start off the process by kind of discussing our call, our education, and then we'll branch out into what we do on a day-to-day basis. Who wants to start? We'll let Bishop Ben start.
Okay. So where should I start? Well, do we gotta give like a history of what we did?
Well, no. Tell me about your education. What you had to go through to be ordained, first off.
Well, that was a nightmare, actually, to be honest. But it was a good experience. Going straight out of regular college into seminary was a eye-opening experience for me. It was a lot of theological work, a lot of biblical studies. liturgical studies, you name it, they had it, they throw it at you to study. And all said and done, it was, I would say, 8 years of work crammed into 4 or 5 years worth of education, a lot of studying, a lot of writing of essays and dissertations. But all said and done, came out with an MDiv, Doctor of Divinity, Doctor of Theology. So, you know, it was a good experience. And then I ended up being ordained into being a deacon and then to the priesthood. So, you know, education was very extensive, and it still is extensive. Still doing continuing education, certifications as a chaplain, all the stuff that's required to do for ministry work.
It's a lot.
It is, and you know, it's experience that some people are not prepared for. You know, they say, "Oh, how hard can being a preacher or a pastor be?" But it is. Education level is very extensive. Some churches require even more extensive learning every year. It all depends on what denomination you go to, as far as what they require for seminary school.
Yep. Absolutely. Reverend Mark, what were your experiences?
Well, I'm a little bit of a backwards. You know, I tend to do things backwards in my life. I don't know why, but so the first sermon I ever preached was at 11 years old.
Wow.
And it was a mess, but I was enthusiastic, and the pastor let me get up and expand and say what I knew.
Right.
I always was involved in singing in church and stuff like that. And then as I progressed and learned piano, I was involved in praise teams. And as I got into my teens, I was given more opportunity in youth groups and small settings to minister, to preach. I remember as probably about 17, 18, going to this up-and-coming ministers thing that this group of preachers put together for young kids, just to expose them to things. It was 25 of us or so, and so we went through like a week worth of just how to, you know, basics on studying the Bible, resources, historic resources to pull from. There was a prominent minister that I followed and my family was connected with, that I had an opportunity to spend one-on-one time with him, asking him how, even as a young teenager, asking him how he studied, learned very early, excuse me, how to study and scripture, and you know, got involved in as many things as I could as far as following ministers and being a part of behind the scenes stuff.
Right.
And then fast forward to the first church that I pastored, how I got involved in that church. I was involved with the denomination group that I eventually became licensed and ordained under.
Right.
I was up under the bishop there, traveled with him for a little bit. I was being invited to go and speak at churches, and lead worship. That was a lot of times my way in the door, and so it kind of got me going there. I went and was helping this church start up, and was playing piano for them, helping in their praise and worship. Then the pastor, decided to leave.
Right.
He'd been there for about a year. The church had about We fluctuate to about 25 people or so, 30. And then pastor just suddenly decided to leave. Well, we had dwindled down to 11. And the pastor asked me if I wanted to take the church, you know, give it a go. And I had made plans to go to Bible college, seminary. I was going to go straight to a seminary that you didn't have to have a BA or anything
right.
to start. So that got put on hold because I accepted the position of the pastorate because I was thinking, well, I'll either make it work or, you know, it'll crash and burn and I'll go on to school.
Right.
Well, it didn't. We grew pretty significantly in about 6.5 years to well over 100 people. And while I was in, you know, I got went ahead and got licensed by my denomination. And then they said they would ordain me once I started school. And so simultaneously doing both.
Right.
And I ended up resigning, completing schooling, but ended up resigning the pastorate after 6.5 years because of just exhaustion.
Right.
You know, I had a lot of personal things that went on behind the scenes. At first, I was having to do double duty, work and pastor, and then finally the church was able to sustain my salary, and I was able to quit. But I had a lot of personal things that happened. And then I was wrestling with the journey of accepting who I am and then eventually coming out. I didn't resign because I was ready to come out.
Right.
I was just exhausted. And I never took time off, you know. I traveled extensively while I was preaching or pastor. And that just wore me out.
Right.
So moved, you know, got out of ministry for a little bit and helped a few churches with praise and worship here and there. And so that's kind of how I knew that I was called very early. That's why I was heavily involved in church. And I knew I was called heavily. I thought I would be an itinerant minister. That means a traveling minister. But when I had the opportunity to pastor, it just locked in with me. And I love pastoring. It's not an easy job. It's a very difficult job.
Very true.
If you care, it's a difficult job. If you don't give a crap, it is what it is. But that's kind of in a nutshell where I'm at. Ended up getting a degree in biblical studies. And I had intention to continue, but resigned. And did some other things to help further some of my studies. Some one-off studies from a few different seminaries just to stay, you know, some survey classes type stuff in between resigning and going to MCC down the road. But those type of things were just to get extra stuff in. It was just for the fun of it.
Right.
So that's kind of in a nutshell where I was ordained licensed in 2003, and then I was ordained. I had a limited license with my denomination, and then ordained in 2005. So coming up on 20 years.
Very cool. Wow. Congratulations.
Congratulations, Mark.
Well, my story is a little more all over the place.
And I'll just say this. It's funny, you got three different ministers and three different routes
right.
to how things happen. So
Right.
Correct.
So I, like Mark, I knew I was called to ministry very early on. And so did most of the priests that I worked with in the Roman church. They knew that I was called. And so, several of them took me under their wing and taught me a lot. By the time I was 8 years old, I was already reading things like the entire documents from Vatican II. Various versions of canon law and studying Greek and Hebrew and Latin. And I mean, I would do schoolwork, homework, and then church work as a 8, 9, 10 year old. And that continued on through most of my teenage years. I continued to learn and study. And then in 1999, I was ordained to the priesthood. And then shortly thereafter to consecrate a bishop. And so I've been in ministry for 26 years. And I have continued my educational process ever since, and have been awarded 2 master's degrees, one in a master's in arts and liturgical arts, and the other is a master's in canon law. And then a doctorate in biblical studies. So, but most of those came after my ordination. So I spent time pastoring before I got my paper degrees, you know. And it's been a long and bumpy road of pastoring. Because, like I tell people, trying to, sell a progressive liturgical church in the Deep South is like selling broccoli ice cream. Presumably there's a market out there somewhere. You just have to find
somewhere.
It.
Somewhere. That's right.
Yeah.
I struggle to find it. The funny part is that I have been able to help other parishes grow through advising them, through helping them. I just don't have as good a luck with my own parish. And so,
don't feel bad. I'm the same way over here in Texas.
Right. And so, and like Reverend Mark, I spent a period of time where I was just burned out because I dumped so much of myself into ministry and so much of myself into education that it just ripped me apart. And so for about 2 years, I took a break where I did very little ministry work because I was just done. And, since coming back, I've learned to take a little more break time. Still not perfect on that.
Definitely not perfect on it.
Right.
As a friend, I can tell you.
Right. Anybody who knows me well knows I don't take very many breaks. I am very committed to ministry, and that will eventually burn you out. It really will. And so I have to be very careful not to get burned out. And so my wife has also gotten really good at saying, I think it's time for a break. You know? So that helps a lot too. Have her nag me about that. So that's kind of my educational background and how I got to where I am today. So Bishop Ben, take us through what a typical day as a priest/bishop is in your life.
Well, typically in my diocese, I don't have clergy underrated this moment because of the situation we're in. But, you know, my typical day is I'll get up and check my church emails from the church, check my website emails for prayer requests and stuff like that, and then I'll go into the hospital server and check out what patients have come in overnight and see what patients need visitation from their hospital chaplain.
Right.
And then I'll go into the ER list and see what active patients are actually in the ER that need to be seen ASAP, ICU, and so on down the list for chaplain calls at the hospital. And then I'll move over to the PD side of it and check the PD chaplain list and see what calls are pending in the CAD system to see who needs a chaplain and who doesn't.
Right.
From there. And then I respond accordingly. I'll lay out, as I'm taking care of church work in my home office here, I'll head to the hospital and do my run around there, make sure all my chaplain duties are taken care of there, and then run over to PD and see what dispatch has for me. If not anything happens there, then I go on to my circular job and work doing circular job with DPS.
The Department of Public Safety in Texas, yes.
Yes.
Very good. And then when
throughout the day, is a, you know, it's kind of like a crapshoot of what I'm gonna do.
Right.
I get a chaplain call at the hospital and have to leave my circular job to go do that. Or I can find somebody to cover for me, you know, and it's hard to find a certified chaplain that can do what I'm certified to do.
Right, right.
Because there's chaplains for hospitals, and then there's certified trauma chaplain, which I am.
Right.
And there's not too many people here in Texas that are certified trauma chaplains. Or SA chaplains, like sexual assault chaplains, specialized in sexual assault cases, which I do. Those are specialized fields for chaplains.
Right.
And also certified chaplains that go to crime scenes, like mass shootings, like Uvalde, Columbine, stuff like that.
Right.
So my day is really full either by chaplain calls or circular calls for the circular world, but still me being a priest, always being a priest first, my job never ends. It's just 24/7 answering emails, phone calls, hospital needs, hospice, everything from hospice all the way up to dealing with church issues that come up when you call me or some other clergy person calls for advice.
Right.
It's just a never ending process for us. And you ask what a break is? I don't know.
Yes, because Bishop Ben then leaves his secular job, and if he doesn't have any chaplain calls, he comes home, scarfs down food, and joins us for the lives in the evening on YouNow.com to help moderate that and have discussions. So, yeah, Bishop Ben is like all of us, doesn't know when to say no.
So, no, I sure
don't. So
burn the candle at both ends, and you know what? It's a pleasure for what I do. And, you know, I forgot to mention earlier in the beginning when I was talking about my beginning history. You know, I always knew that I was going to have this calling. Mm-hmm. Not as quite as young age as you were, but I always knew. And, you know, the thing is, it is a blessing to serve where I serve.
Yes, it is.
It really is. And I'm lucky to have been appointed to the Old Catholic Church International and be a producer for the podcast and have different tasks.
Right.
That I'm assigned. I enjoy doing what I do. Yes, it can be stressful, but hey, you know, the way I look at it, and I remember my abbot in seminary school, he was a Jesuit, and he said at the time it was Brother Ben. You know, Brother Ben, you have plenty of time to sleep when you're dead, brother.
Right.
So I think it took that to heart. And sometimes I do too much. Sometimes I do.
I get that. So, Reverend Mark, tell us about your day.
Well, like Bishop Ben, I'm also bivocational. I have a full-time job during the day, 7:30 to 4. And then I'm considered part-time pastor of MCC of Our Redeemer, but there's no such thing as a part-time pastor. So I just tell people I'm a full-time pastor with part-time pay.
Right.
And so I get to work and I do my best not to mix MCC work with where I work.
Right.
I do my best to have everything funneled through my church email. My administrator is very good about that. Unless there's a true emergency, then I'll get a text. And when I do a break during the day for my lunch, or you know, I go to the restroom, I'll check my church emails real quick to see if I see anything that's marked urgent or anything of that nature. Sometimes, you know, people going into the hospital or whatever. So on my lunch breaks, a lot of, you know, I'll eat and I'll deal with responding to stuff that needs responses.
Right.
Or I wait till I get off work at 4:00. And some days I'll go up to the church. My meeting times at church are Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, anytime after 4:00. Some weeks I have meetings on all of those days. Some weeks I'm grace, you know, I don't.
Right.
My job, my day job is very, very busy. I really don't have time to where I can, you know, just check my phone, look at emails and respond. So Mondays are usually my work, planning, verifying stuff from the week, looking over. I try to be a couple of months ahead as far as what my sermon topics are. And I'll jot notes down about what I want to do with certain sermons.
Right.
And then Mondays, I usually start really honing in on what I want to do for that following Sunday, whether it's research on a passage of scripture, which I pretty much do on just about everything. I don't really bring in a lot of my historical context on passages of scriptures every sermon. Some people do. That's great. I admire people that do that and can tie it in beautifully. I'm a recovering Pentecostal preacher, and I've had to learn how to go from preaching 45 minutes to an hour into 20 minutes to 20, you know, 15 to 20 minutes.
Right.
Because that's what our congregation's accustomed to. I do an okay job with it. Sometimes it's 23 minutes, but we don't let those out too often. So Mondays, I tend to spend a good bit of time studying, planning, particularly after I have a cigar with you on Monday.
Right.
And then Tuesdays can be meeting days, like this upcoming Tuesday. We have a dining night out where once a month our congregation will pick a restaurant and go eat there.
Right.
So I'll get off work. I'll probably go up to church, spend time just working on stuff, planning out things, or looking at stuff that we may need to start getting ready to advertise, make phone calls. Then I'll go to the dining night out. And that'll usually that'll last till about 8:30, and I won't get home till 8:30, 9:00, after having left the house at 6:45, 7:00. Makes for a long day.
Very long day, yes.
Next week would have been my board meeting, but we suspended the board meeting for the month of July because of summer. Sometimes I'll meet with my music minister before their choir practice on Wednesdays, and then touch base with my admin on a regular basis, you know, weekends I'll do, you know, funerals. You never know when those are going to be. There's right. Many a times that I've had to take personal time off, PTO, from my work, use my vacation time to go do funerals or to handle church business, because we have to clock in at our job. Even though it's a office job, they still make us do that. So I have to make that time up. Right. If I go to a hospital visit during the day, because a lot of times that's when I have to do it. I have to make that time up. I can take my, a lot of times I'll take my lunch hour, go visit somebody, and then come back to work. And sometimes I can squeeze it in an hour, which is what I get for lunch. Sometimes it's an hour and a half, and so I have to make that time up. Fortunately, I work at a place where they're understanding. I don't abuse that. I don't do church work on company time,
right,
and vice versa. I keep that very strict. Friday or Saturday, I'll spend time rereading all my notes, typing them up, putting in them to final tweaks for the sermon. Sunday morning, I'm at church by between 9 and 9:30 to make sure that all the I look over the PowerPoint one more time, make sure all my stuff's done so that by the time people start trickling in to service, I'm clear of having to do technical stuff. And I'm free for the congregation, because people don't, when they see the pastor, they don't go, oh, he's got to do work, I better leave him alone. You know, they want to communicate, you know, a prayer request, how they're doing. And you're there for the flock. You're not there to do technical stuff. And so I get there early to do that. And a lot of times I'm out of church on a Sunday by probably 12:45, I would guess now. So that's in a nutshell. Some weeks are very heavy. You know, sometimes I'll have meetings Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, sometimes couple meetings. Every once in a while I have to meet with people. I can do weddings on a lot of times weddings on Friday or Saturday.
Right.
So that eats up my weekend. There's some months where I have one weekend in which I don't do hardly anything. Sometimes I have every weekend in the month is tied up with a wedding, a service, and so on and so forth.
Right. Well, thank you for sharing.
It's some of the stuff.
Yes. I'm in full-time ministry, but I also go to school, so back to college, because I thought I needed another degree, like I needed a hole in the head. But anyway, and so I have kind of two schedules. I have my non-school schedule and my school schedule. So when school is in session, college is in session, my days are pretty much before noon. It's all about college. And then one day a week is afternoons and evenings are homework for college. I try to limit it to just that, but sometimes it bleeds over into another day or so. Depends on how much homework I get assigned, because every professor thinks they are the only class you have, and thus you should be able to do 10 times the homework a normal class for them. And so sometimes that bleeds over into another day. The days that I'm not doing homework in the evenings and afternoons, then usually afternoon and evenings are spent emails, talking to the other clergy of the church, getting parish stuff done, like the bulletin, the PowerPoint, the newsletter, the blog post. I do all of that. That's all stuff I do myself as pastor of the local parish. And so those fall throughout the week. I try to get a little bit done each night, so I don't have to, you know, do it all at once. Although lately, Friday seems to be my day for doing all of that at one time. So I spent all day Friday. That's my non-school schedule time. Even though I'm not in full-time chaplaincy anymore, I still get phone calls from time to time from nursing homes and hospitals to come and see patients that are not able to find anybody else to go see. That the Roman Church has failed to, you know, connect with them. And so I end up going and filling in as a Catholic representative. And so that still happens. That can come at any time, day or night. We are about to resume having services once a month at a local nursing home. They rotate through Baptist, Methodist. I think it's a Presbyterian, and then us, Old Catholic. And they're getting ready to restart that. It's been down since COVID started. And so they've reached out about, will we be willing to come back and do that one Sunday a month? And I said, well, sure, absolutely. So that may be something coming back into our schedule. You can find me every Sunday morning at the MCC of Our Redeemer.
Yes.
Where I am kind of a jack of all trades, master of none. I do a little bit of everything. Primarily, I handle their online video service. I make sure that it streams properly and that, you know, the scenes are changed and all of that good stuff. And help out whoever's running the PowerPoint. And occasionally dabble in sound if it's necessary, if something's gotten wacky out of line.
Helps us serve communion.
I help serve communion, and I sometimes do the PowerPoint, the online prayer requests.
Covers the pulpit.
I cover the pulpit once in a while, yeah. When Reverend Mark needs a break, I will cover for him and get up there and go, no, I'm not Reverend Mark. He's better looking, but he's not here this Sunday. And then, unless there's a potluck afterwards, I spend time in between services finalizing anything that needs finalizing for our service at 3 o'clock. So if the PowerPoint's not completely done yet, then I finish it up and... or I may look over the readings again and be thinking towards what I'm going to preach. Or if there's any tweaking that needs to be done to the video or audio services in between services, I can fix that then. Thankfully, we no longer have trouble with the projectors and the display.
Praise God, from whom all blessings flow. Good Lord.
For a while there, that was a huge problem. We never knew if it was going to work on a Sunday or not, but we've gotten that repaired now and up and running. And then we have our service at 3 o'clock, which is over usually by 4:30. And then I do QAs on You Now and TikTok afterwards till about 5:30, while Subdeacon Luna and Deacon Dana put everything away, clean everything up, and then come home and try to crash for an hour or two before coming back online on younow.com to talk to you wonderful people. And that's an every night thing, unless I take a night off. It's an every night thing, being on You Now. Let's see, during the summer or when I'm on break from college, my entire day is eaten up with church work. Whether it's stuff for other parishes that I do as part of my work with the Office of Communications and Media Relations, or as presiding bishop of the church, or work to try to build up our diocese, bring in more clergy and parishes. or just local parish work. My day is eaten up with that. And then the occasional family outing, like today we went and saw Inside Out 2, because my wife just absolutely loves that series of movies. So we took time this afternoon to go do that. Because she has to remind me every so often to take a break. Jesus said the poor will be with you always. What he didn't say is the church will be with you always. You can take a break once in a blue moon. But so that's kind of my day in and day out here at our friary in North Augusta. So that's a lot.
It is, and oftentimes people, oh, well, you get paid to do that. Well, I know you don't.
I don't, no.
Not always.
And, I mean, I do get a salary from the church, and again, it's considered part-time pay.
Right.
And it's one of those things that I've never gone in and demanded a church pay me XYZ.
Right.
In all the years that I've pastored or served in ministry positions, I've not advocated for, I've got to have this or I'm gone.
Right.
Ministry is a little bit different animal than, say, where I work. You know, I've negotiated there and other places that I work, but in ministry, it's part of your life.
Right.
I believe a church should pay their pastor. That's a personal belief of mine.
Right.
I believe a church should do it within reason.
Right.
You know, a church that is a larger ministry, pastor's got to facilitate a lot of stuff. I don't agree with the ridiculous and insane amounts that some pastors get.
Right.
Right.
I think that's beyond the scope of what Christ taught us.
Right.
But I'm appreciative what the church pays me and gives me and blesses me with. And this will sound a little off, and I don't mean this offensively at all, but sometimes the money with the amount of work, the concern, the heartbreak, the rewards as well, doesn't equal, it's not a one-for-one exchange.
Right.
And sometimes in ministry, whatever you're being paid is not worth it when people are giving you hard times. And because a pastor has to, if they truly love the church, a pastor has to know his audience, be aware of his people, smell like the sheep because you're among them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Understand politics in church. And if you don't think there's politics in church, you haven't been going to a church with people in it.
Right. Amen.
Amen to that.
You've got to know what to say, when to say it, how to say it. You've got to have a somewhat of an idea of how monies and budgets function and work and keep an eye on all that.
Right.
You've got to be able to give good counsel to the best of your ability. You've got to be able to hold your congregation's attention with whatever you're presenting.
Right.
You've got to manage. You've got to empower. You've got to lead. You've got to encourage, inspire, hold hands. And you've got to be able to suck it up when people put you down.
Right.
You know, You've got to be able to deal with people leaving. You got to be able to deal with people, oh, I don't like how he preaches, or I don't like how long he preaches, or I don't like the style that he preaches, and all of those things. And you have to keep your eye on the ball of you're called to do it. These people are precious to you.
Right.
When I take off, I'm itching to get back to be among my people. I want to see the white of their eyes. I want to see hear their tones, be around their spirits to know how they feel. And I'm concerned about them.
And don't let him fool you, because I've seen him in the live streams when he's off. He checks in and makes sure it's all going okay.
Used to, I would check in just to make sure that we were able to stream.
Right.
Because there for a while we had issues connecting. And
right.
But if you truly care about your church being healthy and growing.
That's right.
Your heart is, I'm thinking about church and my people and things even while I'm working sometimes.
Right.
I'll have something pop up in my spirit while I'm working. I'll quickly jot it down and I'll get back to my day job. And it is a life commitment.
It
is. You have to be willing to be vulnerable. You have to be willing for people to pry into your personal life. You have to know how to establish boundaries around your personal life.
Right.
You have to have people that you can confide in, and know a good therapist.
Right.
Exactly.
Because pastors, as much as we're called to lead, we also are flesh and blood, filled with emotions, and have feelings.
Right. Absolutely. Well, we're running down on time now, so I want to ask that all of us answer this question. If you had a young person come to you today and say, I think I am called to the ministry, what advice would you give them? We'll start with Bishop Ben. What advice would you give that young person who thinks they're called to ministry?
Wow, that's a deep, deep question, and a very good question. I would say, and most importantly, I would tell them the advice I'd give would be like, basically sit there and discern your calling, really pray about it, really think about, is God calling you to be a minister, and where is he calling you to be a minister at? And discernment is a big key. I was fortunate enough to have somebody sit me down and tell me you had to discern before you jump in with both feet getting wet. Make sure you're prepared to do that call, to handle that call. Make sure you're prepared to say yes to God and answer that call and be devoted to where you are. I would recommend doing a lot of research into what you're about to get into. Visit your local parish or your local church and serve in some kind of capacity as either an acolyte or an altar server or whatever your local parish may call your servers around there. So the main important thing for me is discernment. You have to be able to discern whether you have that call or not. You just can't sit there and say, well, I think I have a call. Because that really doesn't tell me yes or no, you have a call. But discernment is key. Let God guide you. Let the Holy Spirit guide you and walk you through.
Good advice. Reverend Mark?
I've mentored several young people who have ended up going on into ministry, and a couple that decided that they just want to serve in a church. The first thing that I would say is you need to get connected somehow in your church, parish, in an area in which you can serve and do whatever your pastor within biblical reason, of course, hands you to do. You need to see how you respond to people, and you need to see how you respond to work that people won't see and give you credit for accomplishing or doing well.
Right.
Because if ministry is nothing but I get to stand up and give everybody a piece of my mind on Sunday morning, you are not doing the work of the ministry.
Right.
Teaching and preaching is a small part of what we do. It's a huge thing if it's wrong and if it's off,
right.
But it's actually a small part of what we do. The first thing you need to find out is, do you actually care about people?
Yes.
Because ministry, you know, there's a couple things they taught us in seminary, and, you know, ministry is spelled W-R-O-K.
Yeah.
And P-E-O-P-L-E. It's people. Mm-hmm. It's about people. And
right.
Not that you're motivated by the whims of the people, but you're motivated like Christ to make sure that the love of God is getting to those people. And, you know, the first few years of me pastoring in, I didn't let anybody clean the bathrooms but me.
Right.
I wasn't trying to get accolades and, oh, our pastor's so humble. I was trying to make sure that I kept my eye on the ball about, no matter what position I'm in, you're serving.
Right.
You're a servant to all. And so, right. You know, that's what I would suggest.
Excellent. Well, my first thought to a young person coming to me for advice about going into ministry is run.
I was going to say that too, but...
And I've said that a few times. As both of you have pointed out in things that you've said tonight, it is very much a thankless job. Most parishioners, most church people take their pastors for granted.
Yeah.
Especially good pastors.
You know? Oh, yeah.
When they have a bad pastor, they're cognizant of the fact that they have a bad pastor. And they're like, this is a terrible pastor. We need someone new. But when they have a good pastor, they don't show that same enthusiasm, that nope. same conscientious nature.
Nope.
And they need to, because good pastors are hard to find. They're few and far between. And if you find one, it's like Jesus said, finding the pearl of great price, you know. And you should do everything you can to keep that pastor. I believe that part of the very first things that you should do in ministry is set healthy boundaries.
Yep.
Because as Father David says, ministry can eat you alive if you aren't careful. And that's correct. Very true. And so, you know, establishing those healthy boundaries at the start of your ministry will save you a tremendous amount of heartache throughout your ministry. And you also have to be aware of the fact that not everyone who comes to you wants to change. Some people are happy being miserable. The old adage, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink, is very accurate in ministry.
Correct.
We can provide someone all the tools necessary to better themselves, to become a better Christian, a better person. But ultimately, it is up to them to make the decision to actually do it. And some people just won't. And so, I think it's important to keep all of that in mind. Being in ministry can be greatly rewarding as well. Reverend Mark touched on that. Bishop Ben touched on that. It can be greatly rewarding. but just be aware that it's not always rewarding.
Nope.
And as Bishop St. George reminds us at Synod every time, he spends more time saying goodbye to people than hello. Yeah. And sometimes that's just the nature of ministry, is that, you know, you have to say goodbye more often than not. So discernment is very important. Make sure that you're ready for the call of ministry. Make sure your heart, your mind, your spirit is ready to do that work. And if you still feel called by God, then grab the bull by the horns and do it. You know, let God lead you on the path that you need to go. Well, that brings us to our end of our time tonight. These have just flown by lately. We've had some really good topics. I want to thank Bishop Ben and Reverend Mark for being here tonight, taking time out of their busy schedules.
We thank you for hosting us.
I'm glad to. Yeah. It's a wonderful thing that we do here, and I know we have a lot of listeners. Remember, you can always, if you go to pod.myocci.social to listen to the podcast, you can always leave a comment or question or topic suggestion there at that site, pod.myocci.social. On any of the episodes, they all have comments open on them, so you can leave your thoughts, questions, comments, and topic suggestions there. Next week, I don't have a topic yet, but we'll figure out something between now and then and post it on Facebook.
Dr. Hood in.
That'd be wonderful. He's been a very busy man lately, but hopefully we can get him nailed down here in the next few weeks and have him on here to talk about his ministry to death row inmates. All right. Until next week, when we once again attempt to expand your faith, keep shining bright, my friends. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Expanding Your Faith. For more information on Expanding Your Faith, check us out on facebook.com/expandingyourfaith. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and wherever you find your podcasts. Until next week, when we once again attempt to expand your faith, keep shining bright.